Thank you, Carson. Looks like you got well quick. Glad for you. Good to see each one out. Are you happy to be worshiping the Lord? Some of you are. We still have quite a number that are sick. Has anybody heard from Nancy? I don't see her. Anybody? Okay, we didn't hear from her. I do want to thank those who filled in for me last week. As you can hear, I still am coughing, and so I'm not shaking hands. But we are happy to have you here. I want to thank Glenn for teaching my class, and Ronnie for preaching for me. Where is Ronnie? Anyway, we appreciate that. And, of course, Winfred wasn't doing too good, but he led the singing, and I'm not sure about who all else was involved. But we're happy that you were able to be here today. We're going to be looking at Matthew 2, 1 through 12, which we started a couple of weeks ago. As I mentioned in the past, we're happy that people at least think of Jesus a couple of times a year. We wish they thought about him regularly, don't we? And this lesson, a follow-up onto the other, has to do with the birth of Christ, which people remember this time of year. You know, Paul made some warnings in the New Testament because there were some who were making holy days. Now, he was probably, and I say probably, referring to the Old Testament. But anytime people do things that take away from the cause of Christ in the bigger picture, there's a danger, right? Well, Christianity came along, and it conquered not only the Jewish system, but it conquered the idol-worshipping system of the world. And one of the things that they set, that in different parts of the world, they celebrated on December 25th in certain part of the world, and on January 6th in another part of the world. In fact, that's still going on today. But they worship the sun god. And when Christianity took over the Roman Empire, they wanted a day to remember the birth of Christ. And so that's how this came down to us. Not that it is his actual birth date, but it was close, wasn't it, within a few months. And they used that as a holy day. Well, that kind of throws questions in there, doesn't it? Because we want to remember the whole life of Christ, especially his death. We remember that in the Lord's Supper. So that's kind of a background to what went on and where we are today. In Matthew 2, I'll just jump down to there. In Matthew 2, we want to read that through and then we'll pick up certain verses. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, this is Herod the great, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, where is he who was born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and the scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So they said, in Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are not the least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them when the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the young child. And when you have found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also. And when they heard the king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother and fell down and worshipped him. and presented gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Then, being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed to their own country another way. Now, last time, we looked at a couple of points, and we'll use that pointing system to carry on today, but we looked at the arrival of the Magi, or the wise men, and who these remarkable men were. And it probably goes back to the time of Daniel. And they even probably had a scroll of the book of Daniel, because Daniel was over all the different kind of wise men of the Babylonian Empire, of which the Magi were a part. So they would have had the scroll of Daniel. And in that scroll, Daniel had laid out when Alexander the Great would come, when different ones would come onto the scene, and when the Roman Empire would come, and he detailed the very year of the birth of our Lord. So that's in the background probably to why they are there, because they still probably had a copy of that scroll and studied it. Secondly, we looked at the reaction of the king when he says, when they ask him, where is he that was born king of the Jews? We have seen his star. But then, how did the king react? The news of this child's birth would have been a threat to Herod. And of course, he wanted the wise men to tell him once they found the child, then he would make sure that child disappeared off the earth, if you know what I mean. And we know that he killed many children, didn't he, in attempt to do that. So we take up number three today. And again, for those who maybe came in a little late, you know I've had the bronchitis and so forth, and so I'm not shaking people's hands, so don't get upset when you leave, and I don't shake your hand. Just may still be a little bit possible to pass it on. But we want to look thirdly at the indifference of the religious leaders. It says in verse 4 again, when they gathered all the chief priests and scribes, they were asked, where was the Messiah to be born? And notice, they knew exactly in Bethlehem of Judea. They would have known the prophecies of Daniel, and they would have figured out that the Messiah was to come in the Roman Empire. And this is something known to all the Jews. So why were they indifferent about it? When the Magi then go to the home of Jesus, because he's no longer in a stable, he's in a house, months have passed for them to get there. Does the high priest and the priest and the scribes, do they run over there too where they can worship him? No indication of that. They seem to be indifferent to it. Why would that be? They knew the political times. They knew that if there were a Messiah, they would probably have the Romans march in. They knew that they would lose their powers. So they're not too concerned about this issue. They may have also not been concerned because these words are coming from Gentiles. And you see, you remember what we studied this morning? Paul said the Jews would not allow them to teach the Gentiles. And these are Gentile Magi. So that may be part of why they were indifferent. And there could have been other things. But Jerusalem, all Jerusalem was troubled about this issue, so they knew about it clearly. And it must have been, of course, something of great significance, and it was. The Son of God was born into the world, wasn't he? Perhaps they were unconcerned, as we've noted, because of the source being Gentiles. And again, they were so tuned out to Gentiles, they just didn't want to hear it. But again, more than likely, it was their satisfaction with their religious situation and a refusal to listen. You know, as you think about that, aren't a lot of people like these priests and scribes? Several ways. Number one, they just ignore him. Isn't that what the priests and scribes did? They just ignored the fact here are Gentile wise men who have traveled hundreds of miles who have come to see the baby that was born into the world to be the Messiah. But they're indifferent. Many people are like that about Christ, aren't they? Right on down to today. I know we've gone through that period when you couldn't say Christmas. Now you had to say other words. You know how we went through that? Now we got back to that. Hopefully that'll stay, regardless of the Romanish background of that word. It was clear it was referring to Jesus, wasn't it? And to his coming into this world. Some are also like the Jews in that they oppose Christ. They flat out oppose him. That's what Herod did, right? Herod secretly called them in, acting like, I want to worship him too. But inside he's saying, I'm going to kill this kid if I can find him. Well, many people today vehemently oppose Christ, don't they? They oppose him because they don't want to accept him into their life. They don't want him in the lives of their close friends, because then their life will be dramatically changed. And they don't like that. And I guess one of the worst at this time of year is the ALCU and attacking what we stand for, right? But we don't just stand for a birth of Christ into the world. We just stand for the death of Christ, don't we? But all of this is important in the overall scheme of Christianity. Jesus had to come into this world. God had to pick a woman who was godly enough to raise him up, and a father as well. But to others, it is a bright spot in their life. And when they have the opportunity, they accept Christ as much as they understand, and they seek for him to change their life. And those are the people we want to meet, right? On the other hand, we would hope these other people that stand against or who are indifferent, we would hope they would repent, don't we? That they would come to Christ like that Saul of Tarsus who became the great Apostle Paul, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, opposers of Christianity. We would wish these people to come to Christ. And number four, we want to look at the nature of this star. I have a CD. We went and saw a video and got a CD of it, but I don't believe it. Many people have funny ideas about this star. And some of the planetariums will show the alignment of stars at this time in history, or some alignment between Jupiter and or about Jupiter and Saturn. And I have this video where they it's a religious type thing, where they try to figure all of this out. But I believe they have it terribly wrong. Now, there's some things we want to look at. In Matthew 2:2 says, where is he who is born King of the Jews? Let's start by clearing up a little bit of the confusion. The Magi came from the east. They said, we have seen his star in the east. Did they mean they saw the star east of them in the east? No. That would have put them off into, Pakistan and those parts of the world, or India. They meant while they were in the east, they saw the star. Now, it appears from Matthew that they saw the same star later on. So apparently, the star appeared. And these men were astrologers. They were wise men in the sky. This is the way of all the ancient wise men. They were astrologers. and they saw a new star, more than likely. They had never seen before. And why? I believe what happened is they put together in their minds, what does this mean? And they put together in their mind. You remember what Daniel said? He was our greatest magi. What did Daniel say? And they got a scroll out again, I imagine, and they read it again. And they said, the Messiah has been born in Judea. We have to go and see this. That's probably what happened. So when it says they saw a star in the east, it means while they were in the east, they saw the star. And probably the notes from Daniel are what got them to head toward Judea. Because apparently they didn't see the star again for quite a while, especially after they got to Judea. Now, in Numbers 24:17, let's look for a moment. Are there Old Testament scriptures that speak of a star? Well, Numbers said, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise out of Israel, batter the brow of Moab, and destroy all the sons of tumult. Now, we have to realize this passage is speaking metaphorically of the Messiah. It's not referring to a star showing up in the sky. Though it uses the word star, it also uses a scepter rising up out of Judea. Did that happen? There's no indication. So if one is true literally, the other needs to be true. These are metaphorical phrases, so I don't believe that's referring to the star. In Matthew 2:7-9, when Herod had secretly called the wise men and determined from them the time the star appeared, and sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the young child. And when you have found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also. And when they heard the king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over the spot where the young child was. So this star was not Saturn or Jupiter. Can Saturn or Jupiter or an alignment of stars point to a specific location? No, it cannot. It's too far away. So I don't believe the planetariums are right, religious or not, in their desire to present something. I believe is, again, a star appeared, a miraculous star. And that star appeared to them while they were still in the east. And after they talked to Herod, the star appears again and leads them to the house of Jesus in Bethlehem. Now, can a star lead you to a specific house or even a specific country? I doubt it. This is a miraculous thing. Did such things ever happen in the Bible? What about in the Old Testament? God took his people out of Egypt. He formed a pillar of cloud by day to separate them from the Egyptians. And night, this pillar turned into a huge, raging fire, which lit up the sky. This miraculous cloud moved. Pillar of fire at night, cloud at day. It moved at different times. And when they built the tabernacle, a cloud appeared over the tabernacle. And the cloud went into the tabernacle, and the light of God, the presence of God went in. So the fact that miraculous things happen is nothing new in the Bible, is it? No. It is only those who do not want to accept that such miraculous things could happen. They want to reject these things. Now, there are other verses in the Old Testament that use the word star, but these are not passages that refer to a star in the sky appearing. So we won't read those. Number five, let's look at the worship of the wise men. The intention of the wise men is first mentioned in verse 2. Notice it says, they rejoice with exceeding great joy. This is a compounding of words in Greek to express unbelievable joy. So apparently that star had appeared. They put it together and headed for Judea. And now when they see it again, they are extremely excited. And it leads them to the house of Jesus. You learn a lot about people by noticing what makes them happy, right? To a golfer, a hole-in-one makes them really happy, right? To someone who's watching the Super Bowl with their favorite team, to get a touchdown makes them really happy, right? What made these men happy? To see that star that they had been looking for. That's what made them happy. Notice also that it says that they came to this baby, who we presume was laying in a bed or some similar thing, because he's in a house at this time. And these wise, powerful men fell down on their faces and worshiped that baby. What did Herod want to do? He wanted to kill the baby. I want you to notice also, they didn't fall down and worship Mary, nor did they fall down and worship Joseph. In fact, no man was ever worshipped besides Jesus in the Bible. Not even angels. And every time, the few times it happens, they are immediately rebuked for doing it. And even angels rebuke men who fell down before them, including Daniel. No, they worship the baby Jesus. It says also they brought him gifts. Giving gifts is a part of worship, isn't it? That's what we do when we take up the collection. We give gifts to the Lord and for his work, don't we? It says, opening their treasures, they presented him gifts. They didn't pull out of a bag of leftovers. They didn't pull out something from a bargain table. They opened up their treasures and gave it to the Lord. You know, David had a statement in 2 Samuel 24:24. He spoke, it says, the king said to Araunah, no, I will surely buy it from you for a price, nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God with that which cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. So David said, I want to buy this land from you, this spot of land, where they will later build the temple of God. I want to buy this from you. No, I give it to you. You're my king. I will not take it. I'm not going to give something to God that costs me nothing. We perhaps ought to keep that in mind when we give our gifts to the Lord, shouldn't we? And I think probably most people do. Notice that these magi offered gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. While these gifts were costly in themselves, they may have also carried symbolic meaning. Gold has long been considered the most precious of metals and a universal symbol of wealth. It was a gift appropriate for a king. Frankincense was costly. It was a pleasant-smelling type of incense that was used only on special occasions. It was used in temple worship with the grain offerings and in certain royal processions. Origen, one of the early church fathers, as we call him, suggested that it may be have been the incense of deity. And myrrh was a perfume and also quite expensive, but it was often associated, it was mixed with other spices, it was associated with mortality, and it was often used with embalming because it was associated with mortality. Now, whatever the symbolism exactly may have been, and we may not know for certain, these were great gifts, weren't they? They were expensive gifts. I mean, gold is an expensive thing, isn't it? Myrrh is an expensive thing. You can buy a little bitty bottle. Probably costs you $80. I mean, frankincense. Myrrh is also very expensive. But keep in mind, regardless of this symbolism, these are the backgrounds to what we saw and started in that first lesson a couple of weeks ago. I want to close with some thoughtful words that some unknown author wrote. Regardless of their misunderstanding, perhaps, of certain ideas about this time of year. It says, "The Lord Jesus Christ, whom we exalt at Christmas, is not just a baby in a manger. He is not a character in a children's story. He is far more. The first time he came veiled in the form of a child. The next time he comes, and we believe it will be soon, he will come unveiled, and it will be abundantly and immediately clear to all the world who he really is. The first time he came, a star marked his arrival. The next time he comes, the whole heavens will roll up like a scroll, and the stars will fall out of the sky, and he himself will light it. The first time he came, wise men and shepherds brought him gifts." We didn't hit on the shepherds, but "the next time he comes, he will bring gifts, rewards for his own. The first time he came, there was no room for him. The next time he comes, the whole world will not be able to contain his glory. The first time he came, only a few attended his arrival, some shepherds, and later some wise men. The next time he comes, every eye will see him, every knee will bow, and every tongue will confess to him. The first time he came as a baby, soon he will come as sovereign, Lord, and King." We weren't present when he came to the first when he came the first time, but we surely will be present when he comes the next time, won't we? Even if we have died, it says in 1 Thessalonians 4, we will rise to meet him in the air. And if we're alive, we will rise to meet him in the air. And every eye that has ever been on earth will see him. If you're not a Christian, Jesus wants you in his camp. He wants to accept you to accept him as Lord, to be baptized into him, having faith, having repented, and confessing him as Lord. And if you need to respond to that or our invitation in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?